Let us turn. Oh, thank you. A lot of vocal things for me today. Also, my microphone is kind of catching on my beard hairs and making a weird sound. So I hope that's not exceedingly annoying for you at home. But yeah, that little plasticky noise that you may hear is the microphone catching on my beard. So let's turn this morning to Matthew chapter 10, which will be our text for this morning. I'm going to be focusing on the verses from 16 to 23, but we are going to read all the way to verse 25, just to get a bit of the context. All right, let's start with starting at verse 1. And he called to him, and of course this is speaking of Jesus, his 12 disciples, and gave them authority over unclean spirits, to cast them out and to heal every disease and every affliction. The names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother. James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out, instructing them, "Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and proclaim as you go, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without pay. Acquire no gold or silver or copper for your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for the laborer deserves his food. And whatever town or village you enter, find out who is worthy in it and stay there until you depart. As you enter the house, greet it. And if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town. Truly I say to you, it will be more bearable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household?" Let's just pray for the reading of this word. Lord in heaven, bless this passage and our understanding of it. May what I say this morning have good spiritual content, winnow out the chaff for the people of God, and may the pure spiritual milk of the word be what remains May it be a blessing to me and to all those who are listening. In your precious name, amen. All right. So this was just due to the nature of the events of this week, a bit of a rush sermon, as you could say. An old preacher that I once knew had a quote from another old preacher that he knew, which I'm sure was from some prior, even older preacher, that a Christian should be able to sing, preach, pray, or die all at a moment's notice. And I think that is true, although if you want to sing particularly well, pray particularly well, preach particularly well, or die particularly well, a little preparation is certainly helpful. So I was given a little bit of time. I was originally going to preach about some of the things that us in our shepherd group have been learning in the book of Job, because it has some applicability to these times. But then as I was talking with Jen in the past couple days, we were talking about something that Pastor Dirks had actually said, I believe, in the Zoom fellowship meeting after the sermon. And that was specifically talking about, or maybe it was Pastor Darcy, I don't remember who. Someone mentioned the verse anyways from Matthew 10, and that is, of course, verse 16. Be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And this was in talking about how do we be courageous, as was preached about in that sermon. How can we practically be courageous in our day-to-day life in bringing the gospel to a hostile world? And that is where the title of this sermon is derived from. Wise as serpents, harmless as doves, a battle plan for a dangerous war. Innocent as doves. I think I wrote it slightly differently when I sent it to Pastor Darcy. But I think we are all familiar already with the ethics of why we should be courageous. We actually, you know, we had that sermon. We should be courageous. So I actually don't want to talk much about, I don't want to spend a bunch of time, you know, going through, hey, you know, Christian, you should really be preaching the gospel. I think we already know that. That's a reminder that we do need. But today, I actually want to talk about the actual practical stuff of what does it actually mean to be wise as serpents, harmless as doves? What does this tell us about how to be courageous and preach the gospel in these dangerous times? Times now are very similar in many ways to the times in which the disciples were actually being sent out into. The Roman society was just basically a couple steps down the road from our society now. It was a super postmodern, they had tons of gods. They, you know, in the words of Pilate, what is truth? That was the Roman perception of the world. Truth often, in their opinion, was might makes right. That was a good way of summarizing Roman society. It was probably the most militaristic society that has potentially ever existed. The ultimate thing that a Roman could do was die in battle. And unlike many of the other societies that are often characterized like this, like a lot of societies, cultures are characterized like this, but aren't actually, if you actually research them. like a lot of societies kind of have the rumor about them, you know, like we talk about the samurai. The actual truth of the samurai is that people were cowardly and didn't just, you know, commit suicide because their lord told them to do so. That was a later invention of Japanese culture in order to actually create an imperialist Japan. It was basically, look how amazing the samurai are. And they made a fake story. There were honorable samurai. There were extremely dishonorable samurai. In Rome, you were mocked publicly for... Actually, I guess the other warlike society that was actually real was the Spartans. The Spartans and the Romans had a lot in common. You were mocked publicly for being effeminate in any way. And you could even be a guy whose job it was to fight other people to the death. But if you showed even a moment's hesitation or weakness, the crowd would then call for you to be killed. Because even the moment of showing that you weren't ready to just die spectacularly, being killed by another man, was enough to make the crowd go, gang up on that guy and kill him. It was a horrible place. So that was, I could go on and on about how bad Rome was. It was the worst, to say the least. The visions of the beasts, you know, they have the beasts with the teeth of iron that just chew up all the other beasts. That was Rome. So anyways, our world is not the same in that cultural way, but in many ways, in a spiritual way, is very similar. It's getting more and more unacceptable to be openly Christian. Some places right now, for various reasons, there are people meeting in secret in Canada because they cannot meet openly. What is career suicide in a job is pretty much letting people know that you're a Christian who is actually believes what's in here. That's pretty much career suicide, is saying that, oh yeah, the things that the church has historically believed from the Bible, I believe them. Like the things that you would expect Christians to believe, that's what I believe. That's career suicide. And I think we know those. I'm saying them because it's the truth. But I actually wanted to give a slightly different little perspective today of something that perhaps you may not be aware of. Some of you will be aware of, others may not. And I want to talk a bit about the youth. Because I think we're very familiar of the hostility of working age people. But what about the hostility of the youth? What are they like? Because they're completely different. And I don't know how, if you at home might not realize how extremely different they are. There are just as a random example, the difference between the humor even of the modern youth and even my generation, never mind the previous generation, is almost incomprehensible. Like, it's just, there's a picture of an overweight rabbit and they'll laugh for half an hour. And it doesn't make any sense. But more than that, there is a disaffected apathy that has been created by the constant inflow of entertainment and distraction that means that approaching them and getting them to actually listen to anything you have to say is almost impossible. If they don't like one little thing about you, they have million miles of distraction that they could put in between what you have to say to them and you. They've got essentially 1,000 barriers because to them, adult life is absolutely foreign and hateful. The way that adults even live their lives is just incomprehensible to them. And they cannot stand it when adults who don't understand them at all keep on lecturing them. This is They are the most different. It's just think of it like going into a new culture, like as a Canadian going into Central Africa and then talking to the people there without learning the language and expecting them to respond to what you have to say. That's how different the culture is for the very youngest. If you were to walk into a school today and say, "Hey, guys, straighten up your lives," all they would have to do to not pay attention to you is say something like, "Big chungus," and then they would not listen to a single word that you had to say after that. And none of you even know what I just said. So that is the world we're living in today. We have to be wise beyond imagining in order to navigate dealing with people that are this different. It's not just your workplace. It's the young people you meet. It's the immigrants that are coming here from different cultures. We can't just go up to them and use the same old tactics that we have been using. They're just not going to listen. So what can we do? Well, let's check out this passage. That was borderline a rant there. So let's get to the scriptures. So I already read the context. So I'm just going to brush over it relatively quickly. Now Jesus is called together the 12 disciples, noting of course that one of the 12 is Judas Iscariot. And there are, in this chapter, he has an instruction for being sent out in this particular moment, and that is from verse 5 to 15. And then he actually goes into a prophetic word about the witness that they will be doing later on. So you find, for example, in the first section from 5 to 15, that he says things like, "Don't go to the Gentiles, don't go to the Samaritans, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And then in verse 16 to 25, he mentions how they will be taken before the Gentiles for his sake. There's a few other signs that this particular section isn't just for this moment, but rather is a pattern or a teaching of how they are to continue their mission for the rest of their lives beyond this original sending, which they are going to be sent out just to go among the people of Israel. So that is why I'm particularly interested in this second passage, not because we have been given the same commission in the scope of the apostles, but rather that we can learn in our own smaller commission how to be like them and understand how they did things in order to be successful at our own smaller chunk of the Great Commission. They had a much more significant chunk. Everyone is given different chunks of the Great Commission. Before I get into that, I would like to have a note. I had 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 1 to 12, read this morning, and don't necessarily have time to really go into it, but that is just one of the many passages in the New Testament that talk about how the ordinary Christian's life should look like. And there's some commonalities from all the different passages, but it talks about doing things like flee immorality, doing good, brother, you know, loving the brothers, loving church, work and live quietly and strive to be independent of others. That was a significant point in 1 Thessalonians. If you kind of gather together all of the different things that the New Testament says about how you are to live your life, it's describing a productive member of society who witnesses where they are. Now, there are people who are called to do missionary stuff. Excuse me. And you may, in fact, be one of those people. However, in people's ordinary daily living in their ordinary place that God has put them, they are already, like where you are right now, that is your mission field. And so God wants you to be living a quiet, peaceful life, working with your hands so that you can support yourself, which isn't to say that you can't work with your brain and do, you know, teaching, whatever. It just means do productive things that can provide for yourself if you can. Obviously, there are those of us who are sick and can't, but then the church and your family help you, support you. That's the other thing, support those who are sick. But anyways, live a quiet life of supporting yourself, and then where you are, witness to those around you, because that's your mission field. I think people worry that, well, I need to have some sort of special extra commission, and, you know, what about the people overseas? What about, you know, people here and there and everywhere? If that's on your heart and you are called to do that, by all means, go and do that. However, anyone who has actually tried to witness to their family and friends knows that that task is an incredibly difficult, long-running, lifetime-length mission. And so do not discount the mission of just witnessing to the people that God puts in your path. Don't act like as if it is easier than witnessing to people elsewhere. It is hard, and it is worth it to make your mission field just those people who are in front of you. So whatever, if you are called to go out, be sent thus by the church, and we will send you, but do not discount the mission field that is right in front of you. All right, anyways, let's get to this passage. So we know what we are to do. How do we do it? So starting at verse 16, I'm just going to read through it quickly again to jog our memories about what's there. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them in the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious about how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise up against parents and put them to death. Actually, I read a little farther than I actually want to cover. I should have actually revised that, but I wanted to cover less than that. This is what happens. But it's okay. No, I did cover up to 23. See, this is quick when you speed run your sermon prep. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and father's child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next, for truly, I say to you, you will have not gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. So I'm actually going to deal with verse 16 last, because a lot of the clues of how we are to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves, a good lot of them are actually in the following verses, or at least the context that kind of explains what he's talking about. So, first of all, verse 17, beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues. You will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. So, why do we need to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves? First of all, it's because men will try and stop you from continuing your mission. They will try to catch you. They will try to discredit you. They will use ridiculously overwrought legal arguments in order to try and get you locked up. Like the disproportionate force that is used to stop Christians from just saying the message of love of the gospel is ridiculous. And often people even from the outside are saying, wait, you did all this just because that guy said something? you know how Pilate said, like, I can find no guilt in this man. Those are people on the outside will even look at it that way. And that's true to this day. Beware of the people that you're going to be speaking to, because they will try and attack you for what you say. And now the goal of being aware of man is not so that you can avoid these things because of how bad they are. He's actually prophesied here that you will be dragged in governors before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. But the goal is to pursue the mission amongst the people as long as possible until they finally catch you and then drag you over in front of synagogues and rulers and etc. The goal is to be able to spread the good news as far as you can. And obviously, kings and governors and etc. are going to try and stop you, and when they do catch you, you will be stopped. And some of you, some of the disciples are going to be killed. And that's kind of, in a sense, where their ministry ends. So if you look at how they deal with this in the New Testament, they always be escaping. When they have the opportunity, they will escape. Because their goal is not to be caught and go to trial. Their goal is to see try and get as far as they can witnessing to as many people they can before they get caught. And then when they do finally get caught, they then witness to the kings and the governors and etc. So this, I believe, is a strategy that we too can try and look for. We are trying to get as far as we can and talk to as many people we can by using the tactics of trying to avoid being caught. And that sounds like, ooh, but just wait until I actually break down what it means to be a serpent. But yeah, sneaking around. The apostles were sneaking at night all the time. We have a great history of smugglers amongst Christians. You know that smuggling is pretty much the worst profession there is, but the history of faithful Christian smugglers smuggling both people to safety and smuggling Bibles into communist countries, I mean, they're using every quote-unquote evil trick in the book in order to spread the gospel, because they're trying to get as far as possible with as most people as they can. So think about that in your own workplace. What can you do that will make it so that you can tell people the gospel, but without people being able to give reprisals to you? You know, who can you speak to that you know they're not going to turn you in? Beware of man. Don't necessarily evangelize first the guy that you know that's going to turn you in. Maybe save him for last, so you get turned in the last day. evangelize as many as you can before that point. All right. Verse 19 and 20, when they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you will say are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. So once you've had your ministry in an area, and you do get caught, once you had your, apply this to you, once you've had your ministry in your school, your workplace, your friend group, and you do get caught, and you get confronted, or you get dragged before the principal, or you get dragged before the CEO, recognize, first of all, that this wasn't an accident situation. God specifically made this happen, and you are there to witness for him, and he has a message for you to speak to the people who have tried to stop you from witnessing. So the Lord says, don't worry about what it is you have to say. Don't worry about, oh, I've got to think of the perfect thing. I've got to think of the perfect thing. Be honest and witness and speak from your heart, and the Spirit of the Lord will guide you. Because when these situations happen, it is by the Spirit of the Lord that these things happen. And if you have some things that come into your head or that you think of, it doesn't mean that, you know, oh no, it's ruined because I planned my thing I was going to say beforehand. No, that's not what it is. But recognize by faith that God is the one who put you there and allow him to give you extemporaneous things, things that he lays on your heart to say in that time. Recognizing, first of all, I think this is a lesson for all of us, recognizing that our actual speaking performance isn't what is important in any witnessing opportunity. Oh no, I didn't say exactly the right words. That's not what's important. What's important is that the Spirit spoke through you, because it's the gospel that does the work. It's not how good your presentation was. People can have perfect patterns of, okay, I know I say this, and then they still mess it up because we're humans and we say the wrong things in the wrong orders. But that doesn't matter. Spirit of the Lord, that's a gospel that's powerful. So in those times, don't be anxious. Just speak the gospel. All right, verse 22. The section from verse 20 to 22. Verse 21 to 22. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. This isn't going to happen all the time in your life. Even now, in Canada, people aren't being put to death. Visibly, like, we're not seeing that in our day-to-day lives. However, if I'm going to bring this down to what might happen, is people will slander you, and again, and specifically, people who are close to you will slander you, will say horrible things about you to other people. They will betray you in front of people that are important, like sort of delivering you over to social death. Father will treat their Christian children terribly in a way that a father should never treat their child. A child will treat their Christian parent awfully in a way, abuse them in a way that you should never abuse a parent. These things 100% are going to happen. It's sorry to say, but men are like that. Men and women are like that. They're sinful, and they hate the gospel. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. People will get angry at you. People will hate you. And even people who are friends with you you will feel that palpable sense that they are pulling away from you because you have started to be more Christian around them and to witness around them. You will feel that sense that they are almost You like they're laying up an invisible wall. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this is the reminder that no matter what, push through that. As Pastor has said many, many times, it is not by our effort that we continue to be saved, but those who are saved will endure to the end. So these warnings where it says, keep on pushing through, endure this persecution to the end, and you will be saved, it is a reminder that if you are truly saved, endure. It is also a reminder that he will help us endure to the end. He is the one who saves us ultimately in this life, in the next. He's the one that sanctifies us. So he is the one who helps us to endure, who actually creates the faith and the grace and puts the grace upon us and the love in us that allows us to endure. And thus we will be saved. And then finally, when they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will have not gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. So, when you are rejected and the person is just like, you know what, next, I never want to see you again. As hard as that is to say, okay, I guess I've got to move on. That's what you do. You go to a new place, witness to new people. Because there's the harvest is white and the laborers are few. And maybe some of the areas of the harvest just aren't being harvested because the laborers are sticking around and sitting in their one place instead of moving on when they really should. Now, this is going to, all of these things that we've discussed, including this one, are going to take a lot of wisdom to know how to do. And I thought that we could actually take his advice now that we've heard all these different things of how we should conduct ourselves by actually taking a look at what serpents and doves do to see if they can actually shed some light on how we are to actually manage the things that he has told us to do in this thing, being aware of men and knowing what they're going to do, being not anxious and speaking when the time comes where you are to witness, enduring hatred, and of course knowing when it is time to move on. So, the final verse that I am going to look at, and the last section, and honestly, if I was John MacArthur, I could probably spend like an entire sermon series on just this one verse talking about all the things that serpents do, because serpents are super wise. It's similar to the thing in Proverbs where it says, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. If you actually took that advice and looked at how ants live their lives, you could 100% base all of your material actions on that and be very successful. Similarly, the serpent is an amazing creature, and it's a very evil creature, but it is incredibly wise, and we're going to learn a bit from the serpent this morning. We're going to take his advice, and let's figure out how we can be as wise as serpents. All right, so let's look at the battle tactics of the serpent. So first of all, the serpent is driven and focused on its goal. Serpents, they got to eat, and that's pretty much all they worry about most of the time, is getting into the position where they can kill something and eat it. And they are incredibly driven, and they will go to extreme lengths to get that done. And there's no point at which the serpent goes, you know what, I think I'm done with eating. Like, that was a bad experience, no more eating for me. No, no matter how bad it goes, the serpent just keeps on trying again. He's going to get out there, he's going to bite an antelope, you know? Because he's got to eat, that's just his nature, he can't help it. And in the same way, never give up. You know what? I know a lot of people, a lot of you are witnessing to your family, and you've been witnessing to them, some of you, for years. I still pray for Verna's sister. I haven't heard how she's doing in a while because I haven't been at the Thursday morning group, and maybe they might have some information on that. But when I think about that, you know, you're praying for something for so long. You know, wouldn't you give up at some point? The serpent never gives up. It's got to eat. Secondly, the serpent uses all of his God-given abilities in order to track down and defeat its prey. And what kind of abilities does it have? It's camouflage, heat vision. It can taste the smells in the air with its tongue. I mean, it can fit into, you know, how many times have people been bitten by snakes that are in weird, crazy places? You know, like you open the barbecue and then the snake, or, you know, your car door, snake. Like, snakes will use whatever they can to be where they need to be in order to strike. So, what are your special abilities? Like, what has God built into you that makes you able to witness to kinds of people that other people can't witness to? You know, what has God taught you that you know that you can tell other people? What has God put into your salvation story that is unique to you? What about, you know, the things that he has taught you from listening to sermons, from reading the Bible, things that special insights that you have? All of those things, those are your special abilities that you need to be using at all times. The snake, you know, you see those scary nature videos and you're like, you're walking down the forest. You don't know. There's a snake on the tree behind you and it's going to kill you because he can sense your heat. Like the snake, I know this is a strange visual, but imagine if Christians were lurking everywhere, which they kind of are because Christians are everywhere in every working place. And then essentially, whenever something, like when you had your worst day of your life and then you break down at work, sneak attack, a Christian's there, he ambushes you with love and joy and hope. Like a snake pouncing out of the changing area and gives you the light of the gospel and offers to help you when everyone else is ignoring you. That's what Christians should be like. They should be as sudden and sneaky as a snake. Perhaps in one of your special abilities is maybe you have had some things happen to you in your life that were very, very hard. And, you know what that is. Maybe you had a very hard childhood. Maybe you struggled with addictions. You know, that those are things that, you know, I've struggled with addictions myself. Those things are things that you think of as, oh no, big black spot on my history. I wish that had never happened to me. And that's true. You don't wish that you did those sins. You wish that you hadn't have done them. But you know what? That allows you to understand. That's like a special ability for you to be able to understand those people who went through the same things that you went through. And you will be able to empathize with them. It's like you have a special heat vision that allows you to see the way that they see and understand them and be able to speak in their lives. That is a special ability that God has given you to talk to those people, to witness to those people. So use it. Seek out those people. If it has been that big of an impact in your life, know that you have the ability to reach those people because God has given you that ability. The serpent does not lose out on his ultimate goal by taking stupid risks. So now this is a hard one because this one takes a lot of wisdom. The serpent is not the actual king of the forest. And if he just slithers out there in a lot of different confrontations, even against something that doesn't seem that dangerous, he will just get trampled to death So he doesn't just go out there willy-nilly exposing himself to get killed. And this goes to the part similar to how Jesus says, don't throw your pearls before swine. If you know that someone is just going to trample you, ignore you, and not listen to anything you have to say, and in fact will not even give you the time of day, it now is not the time to strike. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't be striking at some point, but the snake knows that they can, like a venomous snake can kill pretty much anything in creation given the right circumstances. They can kill a rhinoceros given the right circumstances, but just running up to it and being, hey, can I bite you? Is not going to work. The rhinoceros is just going to step on him or run away. But the snake is wise and knows that when the rhinoceros is at his lowest point, now is the time to strike. So you may see people that, okay, if I go and witness to my boss right now, he's just going to fire me. That would not be wise. Why? Because, you know, because it's cowardly? Because the snake should be a coward? No, because the snake knows that if I'm here, I have opportunity to witness to all these other people, and then when the time is ripe, and it will not get me kicked out of this situation, I will have an opportunity to witness to the grand poobah, the boss. But I need to wait until the opportunity is given to me, because otherwise I just won't have all the contact with all these other people. I will be trampled on and cast out, and then I'll have to move on. And that's the other thing. The snake moves on. There's this great little thing in nature documentaries where there's a stupid frog where when the snake bites it, it like excretes foam, and then the snake can't like close its mouth for like 3 days. At that point, the snake moves on. So you have a guy, and he's an atheist or whatever, or just a hard-headed guy, and when you try and talk to him, it's one of those things where, you know, like you give an argument, and then he goes, yeah, 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 and then just says a different argument. So you beat him here, and then he goes, yeah, 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 and then just says, yeah, but what about this? But what about this? But what about this? It's time to move on. Maybe when that guy is ready and he's in a different stage in his life, maybe when he actually wants to, when the Lord is opening his ears, then it's time. You have limited resources in this world. You have limited time in this world. There are other people you could talk to. Sometimes it is time to move on. I should probably wrap up. Unsurprisingly, when I do a less rigid thing, I have so much to say that I still go the same amount of time. But let's just talk about the dove. The dove, fundamentally, is not designed for attack or violence. So I've just been talking about the wisdom of something that is fundamentally designed for violence. And then, so we're supposed to show up like the serpent, pow, ambush, and then we are to be the dove when we are there. So we are to attack people at their lowest points with the tenderest love and compassion and understanding, listening to them, hearing their woes, and giving them the wisdom of God in the gentlest, most loving way. That is what it means to be as harmless as a dove. So there's a few different things. The dove does not do violence or provoke others. The dove is not trying to start a fight ever. You ever see a dove, you know, get into a fight? They don't. Things attack doves. Doves don't start it. We're not here to start fights. We're not here to start arguments. We will have to argue with people, but we do it in love and kindness and gentleness. And if they're being bullheaded, we let them be bullheaded. We don't get riled up. We don't ruin everything just to be right. Because we are right. But we want the power of God to save them, not our arguments to save them. The other thing that the dove is, it is trusted to be harmless in any situation. No matter what, the dove is harmless. It's easy to be harmless, when everybody is kind of not paying attention to you. But say someone gets into their lowest point and they've been really mean to you, and then the flesh is saying, now's your chance, now's your chance. The dove is harmless even when the wicked man is vulnerable in front of him. He is harmless, and he does not take advantage of that situation. And the dove is a symbol of peace for all men to look at. The dove tries to create peace. It doesn't mean that the dove is cowardly. Actually, the dove is so harmless that that it's a thing that's like easy to catch and eat. that's the part where you need serpent wisdom. But the dove is a symbol of peace. We should be bringing people together, not bringing them together by accepting their lies, but bringing them together by showing them what it really means to listen, what it really means to love, what it really means to heap burning coals on your enemy's head by loving them so much that an enemy becomes your friend. And you know what? I'm going to say this. The Christians in the history of the world have been both of these things. It's amazing. Read some Christian biographies and you will see how serpent-wise they are. The great missionaries and the great evangelists, they are serpent-wise in the way that they deal with people. And they are dove-harmless. And they turn enemies into friends. And they turn wicked attackers into loving followers of the King. So the stuff that I got out of some of the serpent things and dove things. I hope that helps and gives you some practical advice on how you can deal with evangelizing in your own life. All right, let's close in prayer, and then we're going to sing a beautiful hymn together. Dear Lord, thank you that you are a gracious God who knows what humans are like, and that you have made allowance for that we are fickle and weak. And you have sent your people to be ministers to the weak and ministers to the hurting and the broken. Lord, teach us more and more and more how to do that with wisdom and how to do that with understanding, how to be as wise as a vicious predator, but to be as loving and harmless and endearing as a dove, that people would see the way that we walk in wisdom and see the love not as our own abilities primarily, but as things that we have received from you and that are for your glory. In all these things, we thank you for your power, knowing that it is the Lord Jesus Christ who allows us to approach you. Your precious name, amen.